Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Morning, Chris.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Fresh as the daisy this morning.
Yeah, you've had your bacon sandwich, I can see. You've got a bit of ketchup.
Runny egg.
We're good?
Yeah, all good. Really good.
Yeah.
New market today.
Big meeting on today as well. Me and Johnny are going in the paddocks afterwards.
Oh, yes. Steve, how are we this week?
Shan't be riding, mind, because I've not made the weight.
I don't think the horse could take the weight, to be honest.
Funny enough, right, you said that. We booked Mrs's dad a horse riding. You know, like one of these red letter days.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, fuck it, I fancy a bash on that and all. Anyway, we bought the tickets and that, so we phoned up the gaff and they said that what weight are the people who are going to be on it, and it would seem that we've both got to chop a leg off if we want to do this excursion. 5 stone of a weight we are,
for the safety of the horses.
Yeah So we're going, we honestly had to be 15 stone, no more. So we've had to cancel, and we're now going camel trekking because we think we've half a chance of getting on. But yeah, so unfortunately we've had to cancel the red letter day due to weight restrictions.
So what's the alternative?
We're going out on piss.
That's a good alternative.
Results.
Yeah. Having a weekend away instead.
Steve, how are we this week?
Good episode, yeah. Very good.
But that era, again, you know, we've had some good episodes from that era. The entertainers. And they've all been entertaining. They've lived up to the name.
I think it's due another email to Faustino, me.
Is it that time?
Yeah, another Spanish email.
I'll try. If at first you don't succeed. Tino, how are you, son?
just badger him. Just badger him until he goes, oh, fuck it, I'm going on.
Who even is this? I forgot he was at Man City, Stevie. Yeah. So he goes to Man City, Leicester.
Yeah.
What about Dave O's man?
Oh, you know what I mean? Brilliant.
See, do you know, during it,
I didn't pick up on as many
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
See, I did, because I think his mate messaged before, left a comment saying, how many times is he going to say, do you know what I mean? And I couldn't not think about it then.
I didn't know. Every now and again, he chucked in, you know what I'm saying, which was a nice...
Just to mix it up.
Nice to change.
Yeah.
To be fair, he's got on board with it, hasn't he?
I know what you're saying, you know what I mean?
He's got on board with it.
Yeah.
He's not took it as criticism, has he?
No. Got that, haven't we?
Yes. Oh, yeah, but a quick mention to the sponsor for this week's episode, FootMob.
This is a bit of you, Johnny.
Go on.
Live scores.
Oh, well, that's my coupon, and I'm sadly over 2.5.
Not just live scores, though. There's news on the stats. I mean, whether you're a casual fan or like a proper stato like you, John.
I'm obviously not a proper stato, but I do like to check who's looking likely to concede and score goals.
But you tailor those live updates to your needs.
Yeah, so you can pick your certain teams and get team news and... So
not just teams either, like individual players.
So fantasy football?
Yeah.
Are you a fantasy football man? No,
too much organisation.
But even if there's a player that you just like...
Yeah, like the look of him?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's your favourite?
I'd have had Arnagun Lags and Sasa Sercik on there. You know, just keeping an eye on. You know,
he's having a coffee today, Arnagun. Yeah. Good lad.
He's having another Smirnoff Ice.
There's a player at your club who like moves on, but you want to keep an eye on the career.
An affinity.
Well. One of your favourites. Yeah. You can just pick that player and he'll give you an update when he's starting, when he's got an assist, when he's got a goal.
Injury news and.
I tell you what, the bookies could be in bother with my 2.5s now. Now I've got this lad.
It's like an odds comparison as well. It gives you the best odds for certain things, and
you can pick
download it after, Johnny.
If you want to follow League One, you can just click League One, and it gives you all the updates for League One. Or, like we said, if you want to keep an eye on Patrick Bamford, how he's doing. Not much at the minute. You wouldn't give any updates at the minute, would you?
His foot is still sore. FOTMOB. That right?
Yep, and we've got a link in the description on the audio and the video, so you can click through and download that app.
Man City last night.
Yeah, oh, brilliant, wasn't it?
Do you know what?
The last 10 minutes.
You know, like people are going, it's a disgrace and all that. I like it.
Yeah, I did.
Like, it's brilliant.
Did you like Grealish's?
Oh, he's got 120 million worth now.
Yeah. His money was well spent, that,
money now.
Just for that.
Yeah. The delivery.
Yeah, the delivery.
You know you? You're a cunt. No aggressive. Yeah. Just, do you know you?
Just informing him.
Yeah, do you know you? You're a cunt. played it perfect, I think. And then, obviously, he's grabbed his hair. And
he's not
retaliated.
You're a cunt.
Did you see them in the tunnel?
Yeah.
What, Scotty Carson?
Oh, no.
He wasn't even, well, obviously he wasn't playing, but he wasn't even part of the melee. And then he just appears over somebody's shoulder and just going, offering to meet them at the top of the stairs for a scrap.
Yeah.
That is old school, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just hands in his pocket and he just went,
upstairs, you and me upstairs.
But the police, you see the police got involved?
Yeah. They're coming waving the costume, yeah. All them lads over there, don't they?
They went straight for the City lads, just left the Madrid lads.
But I don't, like, they say, people were like on Twitter, we don't want to see that and all that. Fucking brilliant.
It's exactly what we want to see.
Yeah. Right? You know what I mean? A big 25 man.
Yeah.
I tell you, Zinchenko, is it Zinchenko?
Yeah. He got involved.
About, worry. Get off my man. Get off Phil.
Phil's not windmilling, is he? He's got to be windmilling, but you want someone like Zinchenko behind him, don't you?
Phil's bandaged up. Looks like Terry Butcher. I've got a lot of time for it.
I have a lot of time for it.
But should we get Stevie in then?
Yeah.
He's just knocked, actually.
What? Is that him in the door?
2 minutes, Stevie.
Come on. Stevie. Brought up in Sunderland?
Yes.
Sunderland fan?
I'm from Sunderland, playing for Newcastle. I live in Middlesbrough. What chance have you got?
I used to hit a couple of balls in your back garden, Castle Eden, on the
17th green. Oh, yeah, the golf course. Yeah.
Left.
Yeah. Were it a hook, were it?
Oh, it was a hook. Wasn't it far from the green, was it? But
no, it wasn't far from the green, but
knifing
still him. Had to get
golf balls. Not fucking footballs, you pillet. What's he on about? He went shooting practice.
I thought he might have been having a kick about top field.
You used to get many balls in your garden?
Oh, shed load. Didn't have to buy any balls.
What's the crack like if someone puts your window through? Do you just get in touch with the club?
Yeah.
That would be a really bad shot for it to hit your house.
Yeah, because the tee's here, my house is there, but like there's a shitload of garden around it, so and the green's there, so even if you hook it, you're going into the... onto the grass. You've got to really just fucking shank it across that way.
You must have been set up wrong.
you
were just set up wrong.
It was always windy as well, like.
Well, when would it go? We'll let you off then. We'll let you off. So, have you been out walking much?
I haven't, actually. I was out just before I came here. But I haven't done any big walks. Been in the gym, doing like leg stuff and stuff like that, because obviously we've got the big walk coming up. So looking forward to that, but I'm going to have to get out because I just haven't getting out.
How hard was that, by the way?
Well, I think you found it really hard. I mean, I think we all
did. You not?
But you haven't done anything though, had you?
I'd done a little bit.
You walked from your house to the pub and then back. But I think likes of, there was a few and obviously your feet were in a right mess. But... you know, other people that were suffering as well. Everybody still got up and still carried on, and it was an amazing achievement.
It weren't quite a social event as what we thought,
no,
were it?
It wasn't.
We were thinking like, well, we'll have a good
bit of crack.
We'll have a good 6 or 8 pints in a night, something to eat, and that. Lads are having 2 pints and in feather.
Yeah.
Fucked. But it was a good trip, but I enjoyed it about 2 weeks after.
This one's going to be hard as well, mind, because even though people do it, they do it in a day, don't they?
Mm.
There's no chance, obviously, we can do it in 8 days, so we're doing it over 3 days. But even still, just climbing up them hills or mountains if you want, and then all the way back down.
Are you doing a bit more prep this time?
Don't you worry, I'll do it. I'll get up and down all them hills.
You heard that before? Like before the last one?
We've got a link, haven't we, though, if anybody wants to donate.
Yes. Yeah, with the Walking, like, walking Brilliant Scars, we'll stick it
on Twitter. Normally when we kind of put different things on. I mean, I've seen even today, the lads have put, like, there's a minibus that we've just sponsored for a year. Mark Crossley, Norm, he's done something where we've bought some bikes.
Yeah.
I think Chris Kirkland's done something. I've donated 5,000 to the Newcastle and Sutton Food Bank, and all of that helps massively. So obviously what we did, and, you know, us here, and the rest of the boys, I think it was a fantastic achievement, to be quite honest, because, yes, it was supposed to be Kilimanjaro, but we actually thought coast to coast, yeah, it'll be all right. Bloody hell, it was hard.
Four.
Although we've only been here 15 minutes and you're 3 pints down, it looks like you're trying to get that £5,000 back.
That's my second pint.
Not bad.
Did you ever go and try Littleton or out? Was there a chance to play for them?
Well, I was obviously a schoolboy playing primary school football. There was no Premier League then, obviously, but you just had all the scouts from all the first division, which it was called then. And I never ever wanted to leave home. I went to Man United as a kid, I went to Leicester as a kid, but it was always going to be between Sunderland and Newcastle. At that particular time, though, Sunderland's manager was Lauren McMenemy, and I met him at a training session that I was doing, obviously, in the 6 weeks holidays. Remember when, I mean, I'm obviously a little bit older, but in the 6 weeks holidays, I used to go into the club and do the 6 weeks at a club and train as like schoolboys. And I met Laurie McMenemy, and he was quite rude, actually, and to the point where when I'd gone back and I told my dad what he'd sort of said, my dad wanted an apology, and because he'd spoke to me, Laurie McMenemy, and asked me, you know, basically, it should be a privilege to sign for Sunderland, which I think Sunderland's a fantastic club, and I think people are lucky to play for Sunderland, or anybody's lucky to play for some very good clubs. But he kind of slagged me off on the radio and on the TV, and my dad sort of thought he was out of order. Bearing in mind, I was 12.
And all what? On radio?
And because I was just like, listen, I want to kind of look at other different clubs before I make my mind up. And I wanted to make sure that I made the right choice, because it's a bit different now. I mean, you know yourself, it used to be like a two-year apprenticeship. Mm. And then if you were lucky, you got a pro, like a one-year pro, if that. You know, not many signed a two-year pro, so I just wanted to see what was the best one for me. But at that time, it was always just going to be between the two clubs.
I can't believe that he's fucking ousted you on the radio at 12. You know what I mean?
That little
shit. That is ruthless, that, isn't it?
He called me an arrogant little kid. And there was no arrogance, really, because he just sort of said, you must be honoured to be signing for Sunderland. I went, well, I'm not. I said, I want to have a look at I want to go to different clubs and different training sessions and stuff like that, which seems quite switched on, I suppose, for a 12-year-old. But I just wanted to see what was out there. You know, even then, that was my whole dream, was to be a professional footballer. And I wanted to make sure that I made the right choice.
For some reason, I thought you were a striker.
I was never a striker. And that's the thing, because when I went into Newcastle as an apprentice, I mean, I went in more or less when I was 15 a bit, because I left school a little bit early. Weren't the sort of great at school, to be quite honest. Not that I was like stupid, I just didn't concentrate on it, just full focus on being a footballer. God knows what would have happened if I wasn't. You know, I just dread to think, in all fairness. But I went in as an attacking midfield player, but obviously I played my first year as attacking midfield player, and then obviously you move to your first year or your second year as an apprentice. Lee Clark had joined that time, and we had a coach called Colin Suggett, who used to look after the youth team, and we didn't have any centre forwards. So me and Nash went up front, and we scored goals for fun. We then progressed to the reserves, scored goals for fun. And then the manager at that particular time was Jim Smith. And I made my debut at 17, Man United away. Newcastle were already relegated, so it was the last game of the season. And it was just a nice taste to sort of play at Old Trafford and against these players that, remember the Shoot magazine?
Yeah.
And you used to put pictures up on your wall and stuff like that. I'm actually standing next to them playing against them, which was like bizarre. The following year, I didn't get a sniff. And then I came in, really under Ozzy. And Ozzy Ardiles was brilliant, but I think what Ozzy had done is he'd kind of got rid of Roy Aitken, Mark McGee. Quinny was there, but he was on the, a kind of periphery a little bit because he just wanted the kids in. It was me, Lee Clark, Steve Watson, Rob Elliott, Alan Thompson. And at times, though, it was like Men Against Boys, and it proved that. And of course, I'm up front. I'm from Sunderland. I'm playing, I've got the number nine on. So I'm basically a Macam playing for Newcastle at number nine. Not great. So the actual start of my Newcastle career as a first team player didn't go very well.
A few messages about the people. A lot of people have said it's the favourite ever Sunderland song. Can you sing it?
The Sunderland ever song. Well, from a Sunderland point of view, I actually find it quite funny. It didn't take a lot of thinking.
We were critical.
It must have literally took them about 30 seconds to think of it. And you'll have to excuse me for the language because it's not my language. But my brother played for Sunderland. And the Sunderland song for me is Leowie, 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 your brother is a cunt.
Simple but effective, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it gets to the point. It says everything it needs to say.
And it's quite bizarre, really, because, I mean, I've been retired now, bloody hell, nearly 20 years, and I still get it. But the most bizarre thing was, one of my jobs for the Premier League is the thing's called Premier Skills, so we go all over the world and we coach other coaches, or we bring up other coaches so they can go out in different places and coach kids. And we covered Africa, Asia, South America, and America. And I was actually heading to Nigeria, and the lad who come on, I was head coach, and the lad who was coming on was from, like, you normally brought on a couple of coaches from a foundation, whichever clubs had foundations, and the lad was actually from Newcastle. And we were flying across to Nigeria, and he was basically sort of saying, you know, do you ever get bothered? Do you ever get recognised and stuff like that? And I was like, yeah, sometimes not. It's just, you know, one of them things. Anyway, we flew into Nigeria, we flew into the capital, and every single time we went to one of these countries, you had to go to either the embassy or the British Council to check in, make sure everything's all right. And we were in Lagos, and we had to drive to the embassy, but we pulled up beside the embassy in a minibus, and the walls were getting redone, and we had the windows open because there was no aircon. And I'm in Lagos in Nigeria, and we're parked up just before we got into the embassy, and I hear, Leowie, Leowie, Leowie. The lad who was fixing the wall was from Sunderland and recognised me. And I don't mind, to be quite honest. And I thought it was quite funny. But I do draw the line because I was walking in Durham a couple of weeks ago and I was with my wife, and I heard the song, Leowie, 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 your brother is a... And I turned round and it was me mum. So it was I thought, you've kind of overstepped.
Did she write it in your birthday card?
Madness.
It's a beauty.
Going back to Ardiles, what was he like? He never really gets a mention, does
no.
he? We've had a few that have played under him, but training.
Did he push you back?
Do you know what? It was his original idea to play at centre-half, because when we had like five sides at the end of a training session, I used to just go to the back, because I have to be honest, I found it reasonably easy. It's a lot easier than scoring goals. That is a fact.
That's where I went wrong, wasn't it?
You should have been centre-half. You'd have played for fucking England.
So he just kind of said to me, have you ever thought about playing at the back? And basically, it was just a flat no. No, I haven't. So we had a couple of games behind closed doors, and do you know when you've got like a player that's never played at the back and he's just giving away fouls and stuff like that, he just missed time and stuff. Anyway, it didn't come to fruition purely and simply because Ozzy got sacked, and then obviously Kevin came in, and how it all came about was the fact that, again, we had a couple of games behind closed doors. I played one up front, I played one in midfield and one at the back. And then Kevin pulled me and just sort of said, you know, I've got big ideas for this club. I think, it's got the potential to go really far. I'm not going to take you on if you want to be a midfield player or a forward, but I think you've got potential as a defender. It's up to you. Have a chat with your family and come back to us. And I went, no need. That's all right, we'll give it a go and we'll see where we go. And ultimately, within about 4 or 5 years, I was playing for England.
Brilliant, isn't it?
It's mad, that, isn't it? That... Mm. They're both seeing that something different to what you thought you were going to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I said, it's quite bizarre, really. And we went on from being this really awful team to this club that was just the snowball effect with Kevin coming in and then the players that he was bringing in. We just went from just about surviving to going into League 2, I think it was, or League 3, whatever it was then, to actually staying up. The next year, we won the league. And then the following year, I think, you know, we finished in the top five, top six of the Premier League. Or was it the Premier League then? It was just a ridiculous turnaround. And then, obviously, the influx of players that we brought in was just scary.
Do you put that down to Kevin?
Yes, absolutely. Because, I mean, he was such a big name. And I think players, when we were on TV, looked at our style of play and just thought, yeah, I want a piece of that. Because we were just so forward thinking, so wanting to sort of attack. I mean, I know the defence got some stick because we were wide open. You know, if I played with Philippe Albert, Philippe used to just piss off. Sometimes I'd look and Philippe would be stood next to Les Ferdinand or Shearer. Whereas if I had Darren Peacock, I knew Peasy would be there. Bez, left-hand side, gone. Warren Barton or Steve Watson, gone. You know, so when we lost the ball, it was like...
he was left holding the baby.
Get back, lads! Yeah. Get fucking back!
Well, that was the funny thing, because Peasy used to do the trumpet. Because when we lose the ball, Peasy used to go... and we used to have about five or six players running at us. The rest of the boys had buggered off.
Was ever a case after games when you're like, lads, fuck me, we're going to have to tighten up a little bit, man?
Well, yeah, of course. And I used to mention that to Kevin and just sort of see, we're getting killed here. And he'd be like, but it's entertaining. The fans love it. The fans have paid the money to be entertained. We're entertaining them. And I'm like, fucking hell, entertain. It's just like, what, are you not entertained? But we're getting murdered in there. I mean, crazy. And it's just like, you know, everybody's getting like great marks. Oh, fantastic team. Defensively, shit. Howie, shit. Peacock, shit. Because the rest of them are pissed off.
Howie, 3. Peacock, 4. Must do better.
Yeah. I mean, the year that we lost the Premier League title to Man United and everybody went, oh, it's defensively and stuff like that, we actually conceded less goals to Man United that season. But yeah, we did concede goals, but we were just so forward thinking in the way that we wanted to play it. That was the sacrifice. Kevin's team talks was, if they score 3, it's not a problem, we'll score 4. Because look at the players that we've got. Look around the dressing room. You know, you've got Ginola, you've got Beardsley, it could be Cole or Shearer or Ferdinand, Keith Gillespie. The list goes on. Rob Lee, we used to arrive in the box and score goals. And it was pretty scary. The training sessions were absolutely frightening, but I mean, it was a fantastic time to play at that particular time.
So no shift in his philosophy?
Like, Kevin's?
Yeah, do you think there should have been that year?
No, not really. I think where it went wrong was when we were closing in on the title, Kevin changed the structure of the team. Tino used to get some stick because it was always because when he brought in Tino Asprilla, it wasn't Tino's fault. Because our team at the particular time is we had Keith Gillespie on the right-hand side, we had Pedro, Peter Beasley behind Les, and so we were fine. We had, obviously, David. And that was it. We were sorted. Obviously, we had Lee Clark in midfield as well, but then we brought in Batty, David Batty, and he integrated Tino. So therefore, all of a sudden now, you've got David Batty where Lee Clark was. At the back end of the season, after Liverpool, the first 4-3 game that we got beat off Liverpool, I done my hamstring when it was 3-3. So I was out. Lee Clark was out. Keith Gillespie was out because obviously Tino had to play with Les and you've got to get Pedro in somewhere. And he went on the right-hand side and Keith Gillespie was out. So the balance of the team completely shifted.
Were you on the bus when Tino brought his own video on?
We used to, I mean, it's a bit different now because obviously you look at teams, they've got all the fancy buses, but otherwise they might fly or get the train and stuff like that. We had a Muirdale bus and it was nice at the time, you know, tables in, a couple of, like, we had 3 or 4 tellies in there. But we used to have Steve Watson, he was what we class as the entertainment manager because Watto used to sit at home and watch MTV and press play and record. For a VHS video, that's how long ago it was. And he used to bring that on the bus, and obviously the lads used to listen to music. John Beresford used to do quizzes and stuff like that. Obviously, we had a couple of card tables, lads, some of the lads used to play for big money at the back, but it was me, Rob Lee, Bez and Scott Sellers. We used to play just for pennies. But we used to have train at Durham, a place called Maiden Castle. We used to have thousands come and watch us train. I mean, it was ridiculous. And we used to have to finish training early because we all knew and Kevin knew that it takes us about an hour to get in the changing room just to do like the signings and pitches and stuff like that. Get changed. You've got the same coming back to get on the bus. So the bus is always parked on the grounds of Castle Eden, and it's surrounded again. Hundreds and hundreds of people surround the bus. And Tino just thought it was a good idea for the lads for entertainment to stick one of his videos on. Because the week before, he'd put some music on, and it was this Latino Colombian stuff, and Shearer went down the bus when we were driving down the A19, ejected it and turned around and went, Asprilla, shit. He'd opened up the latch and winged it down the A19. So Tino just thought, well, I'll spice it up a little bit. So he brought this video, and Ken, the driver, put this on. So he puts it on. We're all set. We're waiting for Terry Mack and the gaffer. And remember the videos when they used to put them in? It used to go... and then the picture would come up. Anyway, we're like battering Tino. What the hell's this? Get this shit off. It hasn't even started. And he'd go, no, you must watch, you must watch. He was from Hartlepool, by the way. And it just kind of... the camera is like focused on these high heels, the high-heeled shoes. And the camera kind of pans out, and then you see these long leg stockings, and it's all this like silk underwear and silk, like kind of a dressing gown. It must be a posh name for it, but it's this silk stuff.
Negligee.
This woman. What is it?
Negligee.
There you go. I don't know how the fuck you know that one. Like, there you go. And we're like looking at each other and thinking, no, surely not. I mean, we've identified straight away. We're thinking, surely not. And of course, there's this dodgy music getting playing. She's in this magnificent, like, kind of villa, marble floors and all this kind of thing. And she's looking out and absolutely stunning woman. And then you just hear a knock on the door. And she walks across marble floors, walks across, high heel shoes on, stockings, all the gear, opens the door. And there's a geezer standing there. And he's got his good bushy beard, white T-shirt on, jeans with a big buckle belt with all these tools and stuff.
I'm thinking, washing machine, bro.
Classic.
What's going on here? And literally, before you know it, these two are getting right into it. And she is screaming the place. But we've also got a picture, the fact that we've got hundreds and hundreds of people around the bus. And they can see the TVs. So this woman is screaming the place down because this bloke is going for a hell for leather. And you can see the husbands, the boyfriends, the wives, the girlfriends, the kids. The husbands are trying to move the wives and kids out the way while trying to look, thinking, what on earth are Newcastle players looking pre-match before they go down? And it's a full-on porn movie. So Kevin and Terry Mack comes up and all he can hear is this woman screaming. And he's going, what's this? Get this off. It's on like four tellies. And everybody's like thinking, bloody hell, what they're watching. This woman's screaming. Anyway, Kevin's just about to reject it. Tino comes running down the bus. No, you must keep this on. This is my new missus. It was his new girlfriend. And that was his way of introducing the lads to his new girlfriend.
Oh, my word.
That's incredible. Even if she were a porn star, I don't think you'd want lads to watch it, would you?
But she was obviously got on his head from the week before.
Yeah.
I'll show you Al.
Yeah,
fuck you, Al.
Could he speak much English, Tino?
Well, again, I mean, you know yourself, lads, that, you know, when you get a foreign lad in and they don't speak a great deal of English, you'll just learn them swear words and stuff like that. Tino was clever than what he let on. He knew bits of English, and when he needed to, he'd actually, you know, come out with a sentence that was needed. But a lot of the times, it was just swear words. I mean, I think even now, I think you've got Bruno Guimarães, that's Newcastle, and he's putting things on Twitter, and he's ending it with the word bastard. And he was just sort of even sort of saying to the Newcastle ladies team, good luck. But I think you put good luck, bastard, or something like that. I'm just thinking,
who's that? But all the lads, whoever's told him, John George Shelby's like that.
I've got him. Yeah. I've got him.
So have you still got that video, Steve, from Fastina?
I have, but I haven't got VHS, unfortunately.
How were the, when you were first coming through, how were the, that older generation, were you? You know, the Kilclines and...
He was meant to be the main man, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think one of the best, most underrated signings I think Kevin ever made was Killer. He just brought a calmness to the place, a more structured sort of dynamic to the dressing rooms and stuff like that. Lads absolutely loved him. Wore horrendous, horrendous gear. For some reason, he just loved these cord trousers that he used to wear. I think they were like kind of a rustic colour. I mean, the boys used to batter him, but he was absolutely brilliant for the dressing room. Organised, whereas, you know yourself, when clubs will be wanting, oh, can we have such and such to come and open this or make an appearance? It always used to be the same people. Whereas he'd sort of set it out where everybody had to take the turn. So, you know, all the money that goes in the kitty for the end of the season for the lads. I mean, as I said, it's different now for players. There's none of that kind of stuff. You know, we could use that money to go away to wherever we want to go. But it was a lot more structured. But he was just brilliant on and off the pitch. An absolute ideal signing in that particular time.
You went there when somebody cut his hair.
Do you know what? We just had won the league and we went to Iron Upper. And my first wife, she wasn't very happy with us going to Iron Upper. And so I didn't go. And all the boys was like pestering us for, like, obviously they were at the airport, you know, like, where you're at, where you're at. And I just knew it was just going to be more grief than what it was. So I just didn't bother. I was still only young at the time as well. I was stupid. I just told my missus to piss off and went, to be quite honest. But I know, like, Barry Venison used to always sort of say, oh, I'd love to cut his hair, I'd love to cut his hair. But it was well known, leave his hair alone, you know, because he loves his hair. He loved his tash. And but obviously, Killer had a hard year. He looked after the lads and everything. And, of course, the boys have got there. Killer's had a couple of scoops and passed out. And then when he woke up, this side of his tash had gone and this side of his hair.
Also, they went alternate.
Yeah. And they put it in a glass. So when he eventually come to, he'd just seen his hair and absolutely lost the plot. And I think Liam O'Brien had mentioned something about, I think Derek Vazatley might have been involved, Venners might have been involved, and one or two others. I think he knocked on Faz's door and punched him straight in the face.
Faz's coach at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then obviously, there was hell broke loose. And that brought...
The thing is, if he doesn't know why, he knows why, doesn't he? Why, you know, just getting a punch, you're thinking, why has he just hit me? And then you're looking
at him. Well, Faz knew.
He's going to have a tash. That's why.
Faz knew what the situation was because the lads had just obviously finished the drinks and left Killer there because he'd passed out and the boys had gone to bed. But I was so pleased I wasn't there because... Killer wasn't the same when we came back, and the atmosphere was different because he'd felt as though after he'd done all that for the lads, they'd kind of shit on him a little bit. And to be fair, they did. So
I get that.
I was pleased I wasn't there.
That's that. There's banter and there's banter, isn't there? You know what I mean? There's cutting because he had a long hair, didn't he? Remember right? It's going to take him a good year, 18 months to grow that.
Well,
back.
That was a part of his identity.
Yeah,
you know, his hair and stuff, and he used to have his ponytail and bits and pieces, but, you know, there's one thing do like talking about it and having a laugh, and then there's another thing completely doing it.
Nobody owning up as well. That makes it worse because then it's like he's obviously being protected by the rest of the team, like you feel, but imagine a bit more ostracised.
Yeah, all the lads laughing.
I think it's probably
you,
just as well because he'd probably be in a Cypriot prison.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, the dynamics of the team changed a little bit after that. Venice admitted afterwards. I know Killer's missus got involved, Lynn, I think her name was, and they were hurt. And I understand why they were hurt because, you know, we could have had maybe stronger characters that should have just went, nah, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Mm. But, there's lines, there's levels, isn't there?
Yeah. Did Keegan give much trust in Terry McDermott? You know, was he assistant?
Yeah, Terry Mack was assistant. I mean... People forget, you know, when Terry was there, what a player he was, by the way. I mean, everybody thinks what Kevin Keegan, you know, the England and obviously Hamburg and European player. Terry done all that. And he was an unbelievable player, Terry. The goals that, if you look back at like the different clips of Terry at Liverpool and stuff like that, my God, what an awesome player he was. But one of his other jobs was at the start of a new season. He used to go around the lads, have you changed your mobile number? Have you moved house? And all that kind of thing. But if you ever speak to Terry, he's got a bit of a lisp. It's like short long. And when he was going round for the addresses and stuff like that, the boys, I just had moved and I was still living in Sunderland. And my address, and you can check this because it's absolutely true, my address was 66 Ski View, Silksworth, Sunderland, SR3 4PW. So my nickname's Boy. So the lads was like, Boy, when Terry Mack comes to you, we've got to be there. And he was like, right, Clevo, what do you do? And I went, he was going, 66 Ski View, Silksworth, Sunderland. Hey, fucking hell, Clevo, you idiot, I'm finished on my fucking list. But he was just... He actually thought I was making it up. Yeah. But it was actually the right address. It was the proper address.
As if he's gone into it halfway through. He's gone halfway through it and then gone, hey, take the pitch.
Yeah. Brilliant bloke. I know he's been a little bit... I actually seen him on Saturday. Saturday. I was at the Liverpool game. And he looks a lot better because I know he was a bit pooly. But what a great bloke he was. Mm. Absolute legend.
See, that, like, as if Kevin Keegan's got a bloke in just to really entertain the lads and keep things just ticking over nicely. It's mad, really. That's his job.
Yeah. Was there no shape in training them? Was it just...
No. No, we brought in Chris McMenemy. We brought in Mark Lawrenson as defensive coach. That was an absolute, the worst pile of shite we've ever known. Because... It just didn't work because Loro, to be fair, Loro, we were trying to put on sensible sessions. And Kevin used to look across and see the boys like kind of, this is boring. And it wasn't a fault of Loro at all. There were good sessions. But he would just go, cut it short. Come on, let's come across here. Let's have a five-a-side. Let's have some games. But as I said, our five-a-sides, they were renowned. Because Kevin's obviously, he'd come from the Liverpool era where it was like the five-a-side games that you had. Your touch and everything had to be spot on. So any new signings that we had, straight away we'd have a small-sided game. And the players that had been there would be testing that player, testing them, whipping balls in, what's your touch like, you know, what's everything like. Some players could cope with it and some couldn't. But that's basically what it was. And as I said, Kevin's team thought would be pretty much the same. Look around the dressing room. Look left, look right, look around the dressing room. Look at the players. Think of their team. They are not in any way, shape or form on the same level as us. Go out, entertain these people. They've paid a lot of money to come and see you. Entertain them. They deserve it. And then that's what we used to do. Let's go out. Let's do it.
I just remember when Asprey came. Were you playing like when he stuck the nut on somebody? And he did.
Keith Curl away at Man City.
Keith Curl? How? No red card?
No, it wasn't.
You should see it. Blatant, well, but.
Yeah. Not I can remember.
No, it was a, yeah.
We hadn't signed Tino yet, and we had a warm up game for England, and we played Colombia, and Tino was playing. And I remember Kevin come up to me and went, "See what you think he's like, you know. Let me know afterwards how the game was, how difficult it was, easy, you know, this kind of thing." I think we drew with Colombia 0-0, and as a defender, that I was one of these where I could kind of guess where the forward was going to go, where his touch was going to be, and then you could read it, nick it, or just anticipate. With Tino, I couldn't. And the main reason was he didn't know what he was going to do. he just didn't know. You know, and you had to be so wary of that. So you just thought, I'll back off a little bit, because he would try something so outrageous, you'd think, what the bloody hell? How has he thought of that? So I can remember speaking to Kevin afterwards, and he went, "How did you?" I said, "I found him difficult because I didn't know what he was going to do, purely and simply because he doesn't know what he's going to do." I mean, obviously, we signed him, and again, not only was a fabulous, fabulous player, great lad, absolutely fantastic lad, mad as a box of frogs, but great lad.
Did you get to any of the house parties?
Went of one or two. He used to love Disney.
Well, I never.
He used to love Disney.
Of course you were a Mickey Mouse fan.
I kid you not. Do you know if you went in the Disney store and you could buy the Disney jammers and stuff, but the old school Disney jammers store, it would basically be like a dress thing that you'd put on and it would go all the way down.
A bit like a onesie.
Yeah, but it was like not a onesie that went, you'd put each leg in. It was just like a sheet.
Like a nightie.
Yeah. So it was like in 90, with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck on, and he'd have a goofy hat. But he used to go to bed in that. But we used to go to his house because he lived up next to the airport. And there was all kinds, man. Honestly, there was like alpacas outside and everything. It was just like a knobby slaughter. There was trumpets playing and these like whistle things. Like, you know, it was just mental.
So we had alpacas in the garden?
Yeah, you just have them just strewn all over. Sometimes you'd open the door and there'd be one in the bloody house. It was raged. Absolutely mental.
Yeah, got this, can you imagine King Joffrey Joffair on Coming to America with giraffes and that walking dark street?
Just driving down his drive, there's alpacas and everything, and then he misses his watering flowers in a negligee in high heels. Then he comes out in goofy suit.
We used to have like some family and they'd all be sitting on a settee and they'd all have this like kind of dress wear from Colombia, but every one of them would have an instrument. And they'll be like fluting and playing away and stuff like that, just in the background. But obviously, he'd have like the daft music that he'd get from Julie's, the nightclub, to blast in another room. But you could go from one room where it was like bang, 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 and all the decent music, and you go in another one and just get authentic Columbia. It was mental.
I'd love to have gone to one of his parties.
Did he embrace the drinking culture and everything, the British lads? And...
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm not going to get in too much information how much he embraced it, but he just loved it. As I said, he would. We always used to go to the quayside in Newcastle, and all the boys did, and we did it like every Monday or Tuesday night. We used to go for something to eat, and then go to like kind of Jimmy's and then Julie's, and he just loved it. I mean, it was just. I mean, back in the day, there was no like mobile phones. That certainly not mobile phones, and certainly not one with cameras, and we've got away with bloody murder. Absolutely murderous, just as well, because, you know, would have been in the papers every single day.
You were flying as well, though, weren't you? So it must have been a class time to be a Newcastle player.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why Kevin had kind of was absolutely fine with it. In fact, he encouraged it, to be quite honest, like, go out, enjoy yourselves. And the camaraderie we had was second to none. I mean, you'd sort of seen about camaraderie. Every single one of them players, I've still got the mobile numbers, and we all still keep in touch.
You know, that's half the battle, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who was it that still FaceTimes Asprilla? Was it Clarkie? Just randomly gets a FaceTime from Asprilla.
Yeah. Has a bit of crack. Do you know, there's an advert, right? That used to come on about a year ago, and it was this big, it's like this inflatable kind of pterodactyl type thing, but it's actually on a horse, and the horse is running around this big yard kicking this massive inflatable football. I think it's on a Vodafone advert. That's actually Tino Asprilla.
His garden.
Is that a fact?
It is. He's fucking nuts. He's nuts.
What was the crack with Beardsley and Pollock, Jamie Pollock?
But this one with Jamie Pollock was, we were in the tunnel and Pollock was going, I'm going to get you, Beardsley, I'm going to do you. And Jamie was what Jamie was about. He was half decent. Probably not the most gifted player in the world, without being too disrespectful. But Peter was the best player I've ever played with. He was by far the best ever player that I've played with. And I've played with some wonderful players. And Peter's just like nodding at him as though like, yeah, whatever. And basically Pollock was sort of threatening him, sort of saying he was going to kick him, he was going to do this. And very early doors, you could see Pollock was hunting him down, just wanting to kick him, just wanting to hurt him. Peter was too clever. He just get rid of the ball so quickly. And he couldn't get anywhere near him. This one time... Pedro got the ball. And do you know that trick that he does? And everybody knows it's coming, but you can do bugger all about it.
Is that the one where he...
Yeah, there's like the steps.
Where
the
knees thing.
Yeah. He did that, and Pollock just went whoosh, went past him. Peter played the ball through, and we nearly scored. And the fans had started laughing, really, because Peter had made him look like a fool. This was at Ayrton Park. Anyway... Pollock wasn't very happy and he'd stood up and he'd get into Peter's face and Peter just stepped back, man. Fuck me, you're ugly.
that's a bit of Rich Pete.
That's what I'm saying. So if Peter Beasley calls you an ugly, then you're ugly.
I've asked a couple of people about the Dublin trip. I think Andy Griffin wasn't there with Gillespie and Shearer. I'm hoping you were, though.
Well, the big thing about that was... I know Keith tells it in his book, but he withholds information. So I'm going to divulge it. What had happened was Kenny was away, but he was meeting us, Kenny Dalglish, And so Terry Mack took the lads to Dublin. Kenny was coming in the next year. Terry Mack taking a group of lads on the drink, basically just carnage. You know for a fact carnage is just going to ensue. So we've cracked in the airport. We're on the plane. We're getting to the hotel. Terry Mack's gone. Gaffer's going to get here. At such and such a time, we'll have a meeting. So we've all gone out. And again, we don't go out in little groups. We all went out together. Now, we always used to play games. You know yourselves, you've been in like kind of groups where a few of the players have gone out. Sometimes you just stand next to the bar and have a couple of drinks. Sometimes you want to have a right good few drinks, but have a laugh about them. So we used to play games, you know, and obviously the punishment was what was in the middle, and it could have been any kind of concoction of drink. We used to play names of and buzz and all that kind of thing. You know them games, don't you? Mm. So Keith Gillespie, believe it or not, is actually very clever. Very clever. Even though his nickname's Dizzy, but that's because of Dizzy Gillespie, trumpet player. And we were playing this game. And this game, it's absolutely paramount that you switched on early doors. Because if you lose a few in a row, you're knackered. And you're just drinking constantly. And then it's like, good night, you're gone. And Keith had a couple of drinks and he was quite tipsy. Keith, at that time, Keith couldn't drink. He was piss poor. And he was already chewing, in all fairness, because I think early on in the day, because it was still early afternoon, I think he'd gone to the loo and somebody hadn't held the door for him, and he was just being awkward, and he was one of these where he was just wanting to fight somebody, and Keith kind of fight, soft as shite, to be quite honest. So we've played these games, and he kept on getting it wrong. So it wasn't going around, so we couldn't really get started because it wasn't going around. Al was hammering him, battering him, calling him worse than rotten. And anyway, Keith on one time when Al's hammered him because he's getting it wrong, he stood up and he went, "Listen, I'm swearing a lot. I don't
worry
about
it. It's fine."
He went, "Listen, you fucking baldy bastard. He went, you call me one more time. Me and you's going outside." And I was going, "Fucking sit down, you idiot. Sit down." So we sat down. It must have gone round twice, and then it comes back to Keith, gets it wrong again. For some reason, I've got a champagne cork top in my hand. And I've gone fucking hell dizzy, and I've bounced it off the table, and it could have gone anywhere, but it actually bounced and hit Keith right in the eye. But quick as a flash, Shiro went, "Fucking hell, look at you." He says, "You're the only Irishman that doesn't know where cork is." Just because it's a cork. Anyway, Keith's gone, "That's it, fucking get up, come on, outside now, outside." So I'm sitting with a lad called Des Hamilton. Remember Des Hamilton, the midfield player from Bradford? And we used to call Des Armadillo for some reason. But Des Hamilton, have you ever watched the film Jumanji? The very first one. Do you know what all the animals, when they run past, and then you see the big fat rhino? Just... Well, that was Des. So Des says to me, he went, "Boy, what are you doing? Are you not going to go outside?" I went, "No, I'm not." I says, "I'm at the embryo stage of a drinking session here." I says, "I'm not going." I says, "That's Alan Shearer." I said, "He's a world-renowned superstar." And I says, "That's that stupid bloody Irishman." I said, "It's broad daylight." I said, "They're not going to fight. They're not going to fight." I went, "If you want to go, mate, crack on. I'm sitting here, I'm having my pint." Des goes. Literally 30 seconds later, I hear the rhino. "He's hit him. He's hit him. He's only fucking hit him." So I've ran up, and Al's standing over Keith, and Keith is out, and there's claret all over the floor. And I've looked at Al, I've gone, "What have you done?" "He won't have hit him." I went, "Well, I can fucking see that." I said, "What?" He says, "Well, he tried to hit us, so I've hit him." I went, "Look, you go, just go." I said, I'll look after Keith. I think Rob Lee's took Al away. I've looked after Keith. Now, just a little bit after that, away from the story, there was me, Warren Barton, Rob Lee, and John Beresford. We did this big do at the Lancastrian Suite. There's about 600 people there, and it was a Q&A. And the very first question, it was a Roman mic. Who's got any questions? Everybody's put their hand up. Mike's gotten this bloke. Warren Barton, what happened between Keith Gillespie and Rob Elliott? Bearing in mind, we've been told, say nothing. And Warren Barton went, "I wasn't there, but the boy was." So I thought, okay, right. Do you know what? I'll tell the story. So I told the story. So I told the story and I'm driving back. Now, Rob Lee was there. Now, Rob Lee was just ridiculous because I've always sort of said, and Rob will like this, if you actually see Rob Lee in full, please take a picture and send it to me on Twitter, because normally his head and his legs so far up Shearer's arse, you didn't really see. It's embarrassing. So I'm driving home and I see Shearer comes up, my phone rings, Shearer. And I know for a fact Rob Lee's been on the phone straight away. Alan, Steve, how he's been telling stories. So I've gone, hello. He went, you macking bastard. I said, what's the matter? He went, you told the story. I said, relax, man, relax. He said, what do you mean, relax? I said, I told the story. I says, Keith came for you. I says, you ducked, boom, hit him. Like Tyson dropped him. I says, the full 600 people were going, Shearer, Shearer. He went, what the? I went, aye. He went, well, you keep on telling the fucking story. So I've told that story. So anyway, when I get back to the hotel, I've just told the lads, like, oh, listen, he's being hit by some drunk person coming past. Rob Lee tells a story. I've told the Guardia, he's being hit by a drunk driver. How on earth am I supposed to know he's being hit by a drunk driver? I don't know, but that's what they tell. But Keith tells that story as well, that he was hit by a drunk driver. And he says, how thick Steve are we, by the way? So I thought, all right, well, I'll fail you. Because when I was in the ambulance with Keith Gillespie, back to the hospital, and he hasn't put this in his book, and he doesn't say it when he does after dinners or anything like that. He forgets to mention when he's in the ambulance, even though he's knocked the F out and he's got blood all over him, he's actually shit and pissed himself as well. And he forgets to mention that. So that's mentioned. Now, how stupid are you, Keith Gillespie?
I think that could have sold another 10,000 copies, that story. I got hooked up there, Keith.
A little break in play, gents, for a thank you to our sponsor for this episode, NordVPN. I don't know if you're aware of it. Are you aware of NordVPN?
No.
Well, for everybody out there as well, NordVPN is the number one for bouncing your geolocation. So maybe your game's only on in China, for instance, and you want to watch it, Barnsley v Nottingham Forest, all of a sudden use NordVPN on the subscription, and you're in China watching that game, John.
So let me just get this right. So I'm sat in Barnsley.
Yeah.
There's a game on in China.
It's been shown in China.
But an English game, yeah. Shown in China.
Yeah. Use NordVPN.
And that makes my computer seem like it's in China.
And you're watching that game, sat there with a sweet and sour, watching Barnsley v Nottingham Forest.
Well, I didn't even know what a VPN were.
What's the quality like?
It's the number one quality for all VPN services as well.
Buffering?
No buffering. No, we don't do no buffering.
So I think what a game to watch this weekend.
And not only that, there's like your Netflix services as well, that some shows are only available in America. You can use your VPN. And not only that, with NordVPN, they provide a security service as well, so all your passwords, all your bank details, and everything with the subscription, completely secure on 6 devices as well. That 6 devices.
So I can watch any game from
your mind's blown, innit?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And as always, we've got a special offer. We've got a COSH code.
We always have special offers. That's why they call us the good guys.
All you've got to do is click on the link in the description and you'll get the special offer with anti-malware and threat protection as part of your subscription. So all you've got to do is click on that link. Before you know it, you'll be watching that game.
So just to clarify, I can watch any game.
Any game. Well, not any... Any game that's being broadcast, yeah.
Right, perfect.
Yeah. How good's that? So, massive thanks to NordVPN.
Yeah, thank you. And what game am I going to watch this weekend? That's my only problem in life now. What game am I going to watch this week?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay.
Was Albert... Philippe Albert, the same, happy with the Cavalier attitude of Keegan. He was happy to plunge forward.
Phil was, what a player. I didn't know a great deal about him, to be quite honest. Oh. I knew he was a good player. I'd watched him for Belgium in the World Cup. But, you know, do you know when you see somebody, sometimes you'll just see a player on the TV and stuff, do you think, oh, he's a good player. To train with Philippe day in, day out was amazing. I mean... He was I mean, he was absolutely brilliant. He was basically, though, Philippe was basically Belgium's answer to Chubby Brown. He was the filthiest, dirtiest man. And I'm not talking on the field. Oh, my God, he was just so rude. I'll give you an example. The first time he played at home, I mean, obviously my mum and dad are big football fans, and we were in the players' lounge, and my dad had sort of, I was with my mum and dad, and my dad's gone, Steve, do us a favour. Can you introduce me to Philippe Albert? And I was like, yeah, of course. So Phil was different to David, because he had to call Dave Ginola David, where instead of Philippe, it's just Phil.
Yeah.
Just liked it, you know what I mean? So I've gone, Phil. I kind of waved him over, and I says, oh, Phil, I said, this is my mum, Yvonne. This is my dad, Norman. And have you ever watched Allo Allo? And the big copper, that sort of the way that he speaks and stuff like that.
I was just pissing.
Yeah, look. So he goes, he basically blanks me dad, and he goes, Yvonne, I have heard a lot about you. And my mum's like, what? I have heard you've only had two lovers, the army and the navy. Basically sort of saying, my mum's had two lovers, the army and the navy, so she's basically shagged all the army and all the navy. And I've gone, Fleet, that's my mother. And he went, she fucking loves it, Steve.
Fuck's sake.
Oh, my mum's killing herself laughing. I'm like, Phil, what are you doing? But he just loved Chubby Brown. I mean, we used to, as I said, the entertainment manager was Watto brought on Sid the Sexist, and that was it. I mean, he would just say it. You know, we'd be in the tunnel, for instance, and, you know, it'd be always on Sky, and there's thousands out there, there's millions watching at home, and normally in the tunnel, you're like, right, lads, come on, you know, do this. Are we ready? Come on, let's do this. So all the lads would be shouting, going, we could be playing against Tottenham, Arsenal, Liverpool, whoever, anybody, Barnsley, could have been anybody. And when it would be finished and just quiet, and he'd go, lads, we'd turn around and he'd just go, titsuit. So the Sexist used to say titsuit all the time. You could see the players, we knew what he was talking about because that's the Sexist, but you could see the opposition thinking, has he just said tits out? And he used to just stand there at the back because he used to always come out kind of one of the last ones, and he was just a wrong'un, an absolute wrong'un. But, I mean, such a wonderful player, but the filthiest, dirtiest man you could ever meet.
See, I never had that from him either. Nah. I wouldn't have him down as that.
Tits out.
Yeah.
He'd always got his cock out, hasn't he?
If I had his tail, I would as well, because it was a decent size. It was decent. Not Les. You didn't want to get in the shower with Les, because that thing used to look at you and you'd be like, that's gonna attack me at any moment.
That were a different entity.
That basically had its own shower. Les was standing in one bit of shower and his tail would stop in another bit and have its own shampoo and everything. It was bloody massive.
There are the lads who wouldn't have it, just like, oh, no. Like, I can't imagine David Ginola.
No, it was funny. I mean, Dave was absolutely quality. You know, we just had such a wonderful atmosphere that we just used to laugh because he was funny. He was really, really funny, and it was just a great atmosphere to be around. You know, even sometimes lads used to sort of say, Phil, get your tail out. And he just used to get his... I mean, sometimes what he used to do, and I've heard I used to speak to Richard Dunn. I played with Richard Dunn at Man City, and he used to tell me a couple of the Man City players used to do it. But he used to actually just unzip and get it out and just stand there. And it might be in a nightclub, it might be in a pub, but it could be just in a normal meeting of, like, general people. And his tail used to be out, and he'd just be chatting away, going, oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, it was a difficult game, but his cock would be out.
I like him.
People just didn't realise.
You're going on the register for that.
He would stand there for about 10 minutes with his tail out and just like chat away, and people would never... We'd be laughing because we'd know what he would do.
One of the lads, Martin Woods, has got a belter as well, and he used to go up to people and wrap it round his wrist and go, oh, can you tell us the time? I've had too many drinks, and just people are looking at his cock round his wrist.
What
time is it?
Do you mean? I just got to say, well, fair play, because I'm just not in that league.
No, we're just bitter, aren't we? Bitter and twisted. It must have been a shock for the players. You've gone from our dealers, you know, seems to be quite rigid and whatever, to Keegan. How was the transformation from them to Was he rigid and stuff, Eddie Lazar?
No, not really. I mean, he had a great bloke with him and Tony Galvin, you know, the lad that used to play for Tottenham. He used to fly down the wing and whip balls in with his left foot. But no, not really. I mean, listen, the lads used to, like the Mark McGee's, Mickey Quinn, Roy Aikins, all these stuff, Kevin Scott, Bjorn Christensen, Tommy Wright, all these kind of people, you know, there were still lads that maybe had a night out and stuff like that, but I wasn't really part of it. I don't know what they got up to be quite honest. I'd imagine just had a few drinks and had a laugh and a giggle like players do. Let's be honest, players, when we go out, we're like bloody bands, you know, we're like kids. We just fanny on and piss about. But we went all of a sudden kind of more mainstream, more like more high profile than what we were. And that's obviously not disrespectful to any of the lads, because Mark McGee was a Scottish international, Roy Aiken played so many games for Scotland, Mickey Quinn was an unbelievable goal scorer, and all these other players. But all of a sudden, we had massive household names. And these massive household names, when you get to meet them, they're just like us. You know, they're just normal lads. That's a little bit little bit weird, a little bit strange, a little bit just up for a laugh. But we went from kind of... I mean, we were called the entertainers and under Kevin Keegan, but it was funny because I was talking to Lee Clark about it not so long ago. We had a training session under Ozzy, and it was basically, it's called shadow play. You probably know what it is. It's basically, he picks his 11 that's going to start on the Saturday or through the week, which it was then, pretty much your goalkeeper of 4, 4 and 2. And you've got a full-size pitch, you're playing against nobody, and you take the kick off, and what the emphasis of the session is basically just try and get some goals and then come back and start again. So the two centre forwards take the kick off, they pass it back to the midfield player, he's supposed to spread it left or right, the winger goes down the wing, the fullback goes around him, overlaps, you play him in, he crosses it, two centre forwards are in there with a midfield player at the edge of the box, other winger comes in with the side. That's all you've got to do, put it in the empty net, walk back, go the other side. So Ozzy has set us up in exactly the same way. So there was me and there was a lad up front at that particular time. He's called Andy Hunt. We've took the kickoff, passed it back to Lee Clark. Lee Clark's passed it back to Kevin Scott. Again, we're playing backwards and we should be going forwards because we ain't playing anybody. Kevin Scott gives it to Steve Watson, who's right back. And Steve Watson turns round and passes it back to Tommy Wright, who's in goal. Tommy Wright was putting his gloves on in the back of the net. The ball goes in the goal. We're getting beat 1-0. We ain't playing any fucking. And we were going through a really bad time at the time, and you can just see Ozzy just rocking with his hand. He's in his hands and he's going, fucking hell, boys, we're shit, man. We're getting beat 1-0 and we ain't playing anybody. That's how bad it was. So we went from that to where Kevin had got us. And it was just, you know, you couldn't understand how, I mean, as a player, I was blessed. I was one of the lucky ones that seen it from how bad it was to where we got to.
To how good it got.
To how amazing it was, just looking at the players and thinking. I mean, there was times I'd play in a game and I'd be standing next to Phil, if I was lucky, because he'd be off, or Peasy. And you'd be in St James's Park, and if you've been lucky enough to play at St James's Park and you look at the atmosphere that it is now as well, it is unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable place to play. So passionate, amazing fans. And I can remember standing there a good few times with Peasy and just sort of saying to Peasy, how lucky are we? Because you've got that atmosphere and I'm on the same pitch and people I can call my teammates, my friends, that are so blessed with their ability, and I'm actually getting paid for it as well. I'm just thinking, oh my good God, Peter Beardsley, Andy Cole, Les Ferdinand, Alan Shearer, David Ginola, Speed, Lee, Gillespie, list goes on and on of just Asprea, just amazing players, and just thinking, how am I here? Mm. I was playing for a team that was so bad a few years ago, and look where we are now, and this is Champions League or, you know, top of the Premier League and stuff like that. It's just scary.
Mad, isn't it? You know, you said earlier, Peter Beards is the best player you've ever played with. Is it better than Shearer?
I think for the all-round game, Alan Shearer, you've got no understanding how good he was. He was just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I played against Al a good few times. You'd feel as though, for me as a centre-half, I'm thinking, he ain't doing anything. I'm on easy street here. He's not causing me a problem. But he gets half that, like half a sniff, goal. Was he the best finisher I've ever played, like, or played against or been a teammate with? I would say no. I would say the best finisher for me was Robbie Fowler. But the pound-for-pound player, as a centre-forward, it has to be Al, 100%. I mean, he goes in anybody's team. He was just absolutely prolific. His nickname was Shocks, because it would be like, who scored? Shearer, Shock. So that's what his nickname is.
What was the crack with Keegan and Asprilla with the Spanish?
Oh, we'd signed Tino, and our dressing room was so close, we didn't like any people in there that shouldn't be in there. I mean, obviously, you know, yourselves, you have dressing rooms before the game, you'd get people coming in with the kids and stuff, and you maybe just get a few photographs and all that, but after a certain amount of time, bang, they're gone. And when we signed Tino, there was this bloke in, and he actually turned out to be a really lovely fellow. He was called Jimmy Wallace, and he was an interpreter. But we couldn't understand why we had an interpreter, because although Tino's from Colombia, they speak Spanish. And Kevin, before he came as manager of Newcastle, he lived in Spain. He lived in Marbella for like 5-6 years. So you'd have thought he'd pick up
a bit of Spanish.
A bit of Spanish. So we're having a pop at the gaffer, just sort of saying, hold on a second, why is he in the dressing room? Nothing against them, but it's the lads. This is the lads or the staff that's only allowed in here. And he's gone, he's just there for a little period of time. He says, you know, I'll get rid of him. I'm taking lessons, you know, it won't be long and stuff like that. Anyway, weeks and weeks had gone by and Jimmy's still there. And there was this one game we played away to Aston Villa, and Jimmy wasn't there. So we were like, oh, bloody hell. And again, Kevin would do his normal team talk, like I'd mentioned earlier. But we were in the tunnel, and I think Rob Lee had sort of said, has anybody seen the gaffer speak to Tino? And I think another one of the lads has gone, he must have just grabbed a hold of him in the hotel and just sort of like rang his room up, Tino, come to the room and I'll do a little of tactics and stuff like that. Thought nothing of it. We've got a game to concentrate on. Let's just crack on. Now, we've been about Alan Shearer before, and when you're under the cosh and you play the ball up to your centre forward, what you want them to do is get a hold of it, get a free kick, just get a throw in, get something. You know, give us a breather, give us a little bit so we can push up or get 5 yards up the pitch, because we're dropping deeper and deeper and deeper. The ball goes up to Tino, he'd do something wonderful, absolutely brilliant. But other times he would do something and you'd be thinking, he's got Adidas trampolines on, and bounce off him. And we were 1-0 up and we were coming to the latter stages of the game. You're talking like 85th minute onwards. A couple of balls has gone up to Tino and he miscontrols them, or he doesn't get a hold of it and stuff like that. They have a bit of kind of forceful attacking play. It doesn't come to anything, but it puts us under pressure. Now we're in the 92nd, 93rd minute. We're still 1-0 up. And the ball goes up to Tino and it just bounces off him. They go down and they hit the crossbar. Well, of course, Kevin on the bench is absolutely chewing. So he stood up and he shouted in the top of his voice, Tino, Tino, when the fucking ball, yo, comes up, yo, no more fucking flicking, yo. Get a fucking hold, yo. And Keith Gillespie, who'd been dropped, leaned forward and went, Gaffer, see them lessons are coming on a fucking tree. Well, Keith was out of the game for another 10 weeks, didn't he?
Brilliant, man. Do you remember what you felt when Dalglish came in? Do you think if he got kind of went in between the Keegan's up there in terms of out expressing yourself and what? Do you just think if he came in and organised you with the same lads and brought a couple of more faces in, it would have worked?
Well, you know yourself. You both know yourself. When a new manager comes in, it's a different ball game altogether, because whilst the manager that's just gone fancied you, or the manager that's just gone didn't fancy you, the new manager that comes in now doesn't like you and likes you. Mm. So everybody starts again kind of from scratch. Well, the vast majority of players. So we had Les left, he went to Tottenham. We had David who left because David was really annoyed because Kevin had promised him, because Barcelona had come in for David. and Kevin had basically convinced him to stay, and then Kevin left. So Dave was like pissed, in all fairness. But Kenny came in and had his own ideas, you know, he had his own players that he wanted to bring in, and the dynamics just changed. Obviously, Kenny brought in, I mean, don't get me wrong, I really like Kenny. I think he was a great, he was so much for the players, it was frightening. I still see him now, I think he's a fantastic man. But he brought in John Barnes, he brought in Rushy and people like that, and great lads again. But basically the whole squad got completely changed. You know, when you look at what the squad was, and that's why the lads were annoyed, because if Kevin had stopped for another season, we could have ironed out little different things, maybe got one or two different players in, whether it was in my position or not, fine. But we would have won the league, absolutely. But that didn't happen. So, you know, the rest is history, really.
And he's were there under Dalglish, and Hullett's come in and again.
He took you down took again. Further, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I was pleased with Root, to be quite honest. I was sorry to see Kenny go. I love Kenny. But Root was one of these where it was a bit like Glenn Hoddle, where he'd go, listen, all I want you to do is throw me the ball. So he'd throw the ball, he'd chest it, and he'd volley it, and it would go 60, 70 yards away to somebody right there, right at the feet or right at the chest. That's all I want you to do. And Rue would do that, but he would be asking all the players to do it. And somebody like Nikos Dabidas, and Nikos Dabidas, bless him, I love Nikos, great in the air, fucking awful on the floor, awful. And he's asking Nikos to chest it and volley it, head height, 70 yards into somebody's chest. It ain't going to happen. So, of course, Rude's getting frustrated. Why? This is so easy. This is so easy. It's not Rude. You're Rude Hullett. You know, you're asking us to do that. We can't do it.
Oh, Rude Hullett.
You know, you've played with Van Basten and all these kind of players. You know, world superstar. You're not going to get the same out of a few of us, to be fair, and I'll clue myself in that. I'm thinking, I can hit a ball, but at the same time, you know, I'm not Rude Hullett. Yeah. And he would just get a little bit pissed off with the players. But there was a big thing as well with Alan Shearer, you know, the egos and stuff like that. And it was weird at the time, because at that particular time, Al was going through a bit of a dodgy spell with the goals and stuff like that. And believe it or not, and the Newcastle fans might like this, but they weren't exactly brilliant with Alan. They were giving him a bit of stick. And there was obviously that little bit about them. I'd had enough. Under Kenny, I'd asked to leave because I just sort of said, I've had enough, I'm sick of this. It's just, you know, I feel as though I need to move on. I need to have something different. I'd been there about 12 years in the first team, and I just felt as though it was the right time to move. The club had annoyed me because I'd asked for a testimonial, which they didn't give me. So I just thought, listen, F this, I'm off.
Why did they refuse to give you that?
I don't know. They just didn't want to, and I just was annoyed. So I just thought, well, fine, not a problem. I don't owe you anything. I've played when I never should have played. I've had three of the worst injuries of my career, and I've come back. I've put myself through hell, and I've come back. I've had enough. So I told Kenny this, and anyway, Kenny got sacked. So I'm with Rude. And anyway, I get a phone call, and it was Gerard Houllier, and he was basically sort of saying, you don't want to sign for Liverpool? And I was like, yeah, okay then. So I met Gerard Houllier, agreed absolutely everything, was driving home, and I never had an agent, never bothered with an agent. But at that particular time, when I just got one. Anyway, my agent was Rude Hullett's agent. So I'm driving home, and I get a phone call off the manager, Rude, and he went, what's going on? And I've said, I'm signing for Liverpool. He went, please, please don't sign until you come and see me tomorrow morning. So he said, come and see me at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. I went, all right. So I met him, and he went, why are you leaving? And I said, I've had enough, to be quite honest. I said, I don't like the situation with Alan. And I just sort of said, it's crap. It's not for me, you know. There's just too much politics. I want to play football. I want us to get where we were. I want to enjoy my football. And I've got none of them. We said all that. And he went, I promise to do this. I promise to do that. I promise to do the one. Just promise to sign the contract. So he said, there's a 4-year contract there for you. You know, it was ridiculous money. And I went, all right, it wasn't about the money. I couldn't, honestly, I wasn't bothered about the money. I just wanted to enjoy football again. I wasn't. So I went, okay then. So I got my agent to ring Jarrah Hooley up and sort of say, no deal. Sign a 4-year contract. About 5 weeks later, he dropped out against Sunderland. And obviously there was all that kicked off. And I was like, I've got 4 years. I've got 4 years of just absolute turmoil. But Root got sacked. But then I was like, oh, I was delighted because Savobi came in. Mm. So, you know, that was one of the big things for me. I thought, brilliant, Savobi, it's going to be absolutely brilliant. And then I didn't have that long under Savobi, and he pulled me and went, the club need to sell players. We had, there's myself, there was a lad called Alan Gomer, Lauren Charvier, Marcelino, and Nikos, and another couple of defenders that could play. And he went, listen, we've basically sort of said to the clubs, unbeknown to you, everybody's kind of for sale. And he says, nobody's coming for any defender apart from you. And it's Man City. What do you want to do? And I went, I'll go and say it. So even though I knew, I think it could have been a decent thing for Newcastle under Savobi, for Savobi to come to me, I just thought, well, if you didn't want me to go, you wouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah, you wouldn't even said anything about it at all.
So I went, right, fine, I'll go.
If we go back to the Shearer, Hullet, was that something from the off? Did you notice straight away that he was just being a bit off with him?
Do you know what? I don't know what it was. I don't know whether it was Rude felt as though his nose was put out because, let's be honest, it's Rude Hullet. And obviously, it's Alan Shearer. You know, an absolute legend, an icon.
And if your manager gets a job, you'd think he'd want to keep the best player
on board straight away.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, we played that game against Sunderland and in the pouring rain, and he played Paul Robinson up front. I think he might play him. I can't remember who he played up front with. But obviously, we had Al on the bench and Big Dunk on the bench. And you guys were winning 1-0. Sunderland scored 2 late goals. My feeling is, and it's just my feeling, but I think it's the general consensus of the boys, if Newcastle had won, Al would have left and Rude would have been, you know, kind of, wow, what an inspirational... He was right to drop Al, but Kevin Phillips scored a ridiculously late goal when he chipped it and bent it in. And, of course, the very next day, I think there was other stuff that came out about, shall we say, a different curricular activity that had gone on with Rude outside the club. That it
different
the
curricular activity. That's an incredible way of putting it.
I thought so. And of course, that hit the papers and gone. And then obviously, so Bobby came in. I think we played Chef Wade first game, and I think Al scored 6.
What?
I think we beat them 8, and Al scored 6 or 5. We beat them 8-0 or 7-0 or something. It was a ridiculous score, and that was it. Off and run.
Did he have issues with other players? Rudel there when Ket Spire went absolutely mental and started kicking the ball?
No, I think I might have. I don't know. I'm not sure if it was Kenny.
Right.
But I mean, Tam was he's Georgian and the hot headed, the very passionate, great lad. As I said, I think he came the same time as John Dahl Thomason. Great lad, but just. He took it so personally that he wasn't playing. And obviously we all know that one that when he scored and he was trying to boot the hordens and take his boots off.
Boots off and everything.
Losing the plot.
That's some protest. Yeah. That, fuck you.
He must have been there. I mean, he must have been there with Rude. And Rude had took us paintballing. And Tamuri and a few of the other lads, they'd done like kind of... army service for their country. Do you know when you've got to go into the and obviously we've got 2 teams. Everybody wanted to shoot Rude. And
did it when his hair coming out and his goggles listening.
We split up in 2 teams and the lads is hide and stuff like that. Anyway, my team was against Tamuri's and the game was over. We couldn't find him. But he'd been an expert in camouflage, right? And he was in the fucking trees.
He's in the trees.
He was in the trees, right? So we're just walking back. The game's over, and he's come diving out like bloody Jean-Claude Van Damme with the flips and stuff like that. And he's going, pow, 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 pow. And he's going, die you English pigs! And everybody's gone, time at two, he's gone, no, front, never, you know, over, boom, 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 boom. Everybody's gone. He's gone, where's Hullet? Where's Hullet? It's over, Tam. It's over, mate. Lost the plot.
Oh, you weren't expecting that, Rude.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.